A podcast of the cinema, and you're Dave White, and you're looking around uncomfortably like you've lost something.
My phone, I don't know where it went
to. It'll invariably go off during the show, so then we'll know exactly.
Yeah, it totally will. There'll be a text come through, and it'll go, and then we'll know.
Exactly.
It's fine.
You're Dave White, I'm Alonzo Duraldi. If you've never listened to the show before, we are both film critics, we are married to each other. That's what you get.
That's about it.
Pretty much. And we don't always...
What are you film critic for?
I am the film reviews editor at The Wrap and a film critic at What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. And you write over for The Wrap as well?
But not as much.
Not as much. And
better quality films.
Well, you know, I hand you the good stuff sometimes.
Well, yeah.
And sometimes not. You've reviewed some real Lulus too, you know.
Like what?
That horror movie where they're in Italy, and it's like the basement or the door or the something.
Remember? What?
There's like a dead kid, and there's like the mother and the house and the thing and the...
Oh, no. India.
Oh, sorry, not Italy.
They're in India.
India, my bad.
The other side of
the door, yes.
Was that the name of that?
I think it might have been, yeah.
I did review that for you, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, that's how I got my foot in at The Wrap. I mean, aside from being married to you.
Right.
But like
there was some trash pile that you managed to see in time for the embargo and
Sinister,
nobody else had.
Sinister 2.
That was it. Okay.
Sinister 2, and then nobody could see it, and you came to me and said, "I need your help."
And then a gig was born.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't always have guests, but we're delighted when we do, especially when it is a repeat customer who is as funny as charming as the great Louis Vertel.
Hello. I feel like I'm in the 3 or 4 timers club. Not quite Candace Bergen on SNL. I'm getting there.
You are. I think you are at least our John Goodman, if not our Martin Sheen.
Oh,
Schoen.
My God.
What microphone does Louis have? Number 2?
Okay, again, you're manipulating the headphones, not the microphones. Mm. Stop embarrassing yourself.
I'm not hearing him.
That's not his problem. Or
okay,
it's he's all on. Right. He's
still.
Good.
I'm going to take one off my ear. So he's,
there
hear.
You go.
Yeah.
Boom.
I'll use my alto voice or something.
Be breaking glass all over this place. So we need to have you back on our TV podcast because you have been a very busy bee of late, slapping down quips for both Throwing Shade, which just wrapped its first season.
That's right.
And for Billy on the Street.
Right. So if it has a gay host and they seem angry sometimes, I write for them.
You write the songs.
Yes.
So, and you know, when I met you, you were a journalist. And so now are you like a full-on TV writer? This is your life now?
Well, when I did like entertainment journalism, it was always in the vein of, can I make it a little bit funny? So like when given the opportunity to lean fully the other way, I've taken advantage of it. That said, I do kind of miss going to junkets and being like, what's up with you, Jamie Presley?
Well, you know, Gray has that thing sewn up at this point.
Yeah,
right. Because right. Mm-hmm. She was sort of the first person to go, oh, wait, this is ridiculous.
Right.
Let's treat it that way.
She's like, I'm bringing puppets or whatever she's doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if she has, but I wouldn't put it past her, or that's coming up next week.
Right.
Who knows?
Last week she dressed up like a candle.
For Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Like
I would have dressed up like Orbach.
Like gold, like gold outfit.
In
and
the
then
Fantastic?
She had... and she had actual pillar candles in her hands and they were lit.
Oh, they were like those infomercial candles?
I think it was actual fire. And, I mean, that's just in my imagination.
I think next to her hair, that could be a hazard.
Possibly.
I think she would have to go with the QVC kind.
She treats junkets as if she is the contestant on the Gong Show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Chuck Barris.
And I think that's how you win over a person like, you know, Tommy Lee Jones.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I know exactly who you're going to say, and you're the right person.
You never win over Tommy Lee Jones. But Harrison Ford, though, will be game, which he usually isn't.
She got Tommy Lee Jones to maybe smile once.
And then did his face just like crack?
I swear that may have been possibly, but I swear I remember her telling me that story. Like he may have actually humored her for a moment.
This reminds me of the Nora Dunn.
I know Harrison Ford. She totally won him over. Yes. That was a staggering feat.
The Nora Dunn SNL sketch, Make Joan Baez Laugh.
Oh, I literally don't know that.
Oh, well, remember there was that old game show, Make Me Laugh?
Yes, and
it was
right.
Way back in the day.
And apparently, like, it had lasted for like 10 years, and she had never cracked a smile ever because she's always, like, humorless and talking about politics. And then Howie Mandel comes out and inflates the surgical glove with her nose, and she loses it.
Oh, my gosh. Perfect sketch.
So we have Lewis on.
Let's talk about things that aren't funny.
When there's a movie with gay jokes that annoy both straight people and gay people alike, we call Lewis in as our expert witness. Last time it was Get Hard, and now it's Chips.
Has it been since Get Hard that you've been here?
I think that's right. And I did a worst of the year thing too with
which probably also covered Get Hard.
Yeah.
So Chips.
Chips wishes it were as homophobic as Get Hard.
That it were something. I mean, this is the kind of thing where it's like, oh, 21 Jump Street worked. What other shows do we own?
I forget that movie is influential, the 21 Jump Street, because it's like this movie is doing that thing where it's the have your cake and eat it too thing of here come homophobic jokes. Now here comes a sketch about yelling at each other for being homophobic.
Right.
Okay, back to it now.
Well, it's funny because this weekend we're getting Chips and we're also getting the new Dave Chappelle special on Netflix, which we talked about on LKTV this week. But I think in both cases you have both Dax Shepard, who wrote and directed Chips as well as stars in it, and Chappelle, as people who off the playing field are probably completely on our side and consider themselves like, you know, down with the struggle and liberal and all that stuff. But when they try to joke about it or use that material in a way that's like, you know, edgy or something, it in these two cases anyway, does not land.
No. And also, I mean, just the amount of time, I mean, first of all, I mean, right, it's homophobic in one case. There are two scenes in this movie which are so mean to women that staggering.
Oh,
well, first of all, I mean, like, Jane Kaczmarek is in here. Okay, no, look. When you stick one harried woman in a movie, she's all I care about, right? Yeah, so I'm, like, rooting for her. Right. What they do to her is such trash.
No, it's that whole, oh, it's funny because she's old you know, and wants sex. Like, that's a ha-ha.
And how old is she? My age?
She must be, like, 51 is my guess.
Yeah, so she's in our ballpark.
Look that up right now.
But yeah, but in any event, even if she weren't, you know, it's like that's such a tired trope, the like, you know, the woman past, you know, 32 who you know, still has a libido is like instantly
a
miserable.
Monster. Yeah,
exactly. That, which was the other one. I have one, but I wouldn't say it's the same one.
And the other one is the woman that Michael Peña hooks up with and then... Yes.
Dax Shepard calls a two.
Yeah, and he's like, yes, calls her a two, and then says, "Are you doing this because she has low self esteem and you want to exploit this?" Like, you haven't even met her.
Yeah.
How can you say she has low self esteem? Yes.
Because she's not like movie star hot.
Right.
And, obviously, she's got problems. Yeah, those scenes totally leapt out of me.
I was wrong. Jane Kaczmarek is 61.
Looks great. She's keeping
She's in the like Steenburgen world of like, wow, you've looked the same since I've heard of you.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Like you could be somewhere north of 38, but I could not pinpoint where exactly.
Right.
So, it's bananas, this movie, because I mean, 21 Jump Street had a point of view and they were using the original to sort of play off of something. And a lot of the jokes of 21 Jump Street were how absurd the premise of 21 Jump Street was in the first place. This notion of like full grown cops pretending to be teenagers.
Right.
This show doesn't seem to have a great deal of affection or interest in Chips.
No, it didn't remind me of it at all. No.
I think it basically boils down to Dax Shepard likes motorcycles and cars.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what we're dealing with. That's all they've got.
They go fast some of the time was the other title of the movie.
Yeah. Vroom, vroom. I think it gets being called China. But I don't get the point.
There's
of this thing.
There's a plot.
Too much,
which is almost complicated. Like I'm like, wait, where are we in this? Some of the time,
and the plot part of it. I mean, yes, in this sort of thing, you have to have the actual bad guys that they're chasing after, but they take it weirdly seriously.
Yeah.
Like in a comedy killing kind of way. Vincent
D'Onofrio
is in another movie.
he's acting very seriously.
He thinks he's in a Michael Mann.
He's
film.
Got he's got a heroin addicted son and. And the son's part of this like conspiracy of crime, and there's art smuggling and money laundering, and I'm like, I don't care about any of this. Why are we spending so much time on this? And no one's making jokes.
I was just going to say, they don't give him any jokes,
no,
do they?
No, none.
That's what's very confusing about that character in the movie. And it changes the tone all the time. Again, like seconds after they have some boring-ass conversation about, you have too much sex, Michael Pena.
Oh, yeah. And they bring up the notion that Michael Pena, they pretty much flat out call him a sex addict, and his behavior indicates same. And then it's just
amusing for a second.
Yeah,
yes.
Like it just lies there and doesn't go anywhere.
Here's the problem though. His enjoyment of lots of sex with lots of women does not interfere with his job.
Well, it does.
Therefore, much like in the film Shame, I'm wondering what's the problem.
It does. Yes. Actually,
if you can go to work on time and get your stuff done, and no one's bothered by you, you're not a sex addict.
He has to pull over every 30 minutes to go into a public bathroom and pleasure himself. That kind of, I think, cuts.
What
into
are
the
other
gig.
Cops doing with that extra 7 to 10 minutes? Donuts, probably.
I knew you were going to make the donut joke.
There you go. Not a joke,
so
just
lazy.
An observation. That's not a joke. That's just what happens. That's actual life.
I want to say I had the same reaction to the movie Shame also. As in, like, that movie kept pretending it was being so harrowing, and he appears to be beautiful and getting laid a lot.
Yeah, he's really good looking, and he's having a great time.
Well,
yeah.
And of course, that's one of those movies where, you know, we know he's hit bottom when he allows a gentleman to fillet him. Oh, no!
And, like, he's in, like, a darkened club, and, like, I'm looking at the ceiling as this occurs, you know, right?
I hate myself! Less teeth. Anyway, this movie is just...
This is a clean podcast, Alonzo.
That's an innuendo at best.
Right.
That would fly in Hollywood Squares.
Yes. So, are you watching Hip Hop Squares, by the way?
No. Somebody is on it, which makes me think it might be good, and I'm trying to think of who it was. Like, Khalees was on it one time.
She was?
Yes. They've had Tiffany Caddish... the woman
you don't know in that really funny Girls Trip trailer.
Yeah. Oh yes. That movie better be funny.
The trailer better not be everything.
Yeah, right.
That's my only concern.
That's how I feel about that Frances McDormand movie too.
We'll talk off.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Tiana Taylor, it was on the one I watched last night, and I sure do love her.
I love her.
She's like a singer dancer now, though.
Yes, she. Acts sometimes.
Because the Tiana Taylor I like is the one who's in Madea's Big Happy Family.
Was that Big Happy
Family? Big Happy Family. Which is hilarious.
Yeah. I know that sounds weird to say, but there's a funny person
in a
movie. I believe it. In those Think Like a Man movies, who's the Mont Blanc Lewis? Is her name Jennifer Lewis?
Jennifer, yes.
God, she's always amazingly funny in that movie. Yeah.
She's always, she will steal any scene that is not like bolted to the floor.
So, his sex addiction is sort of, that's some weak, weak sex addiction.
Yeah.
It involves a lot of sexting.
Right.
And some kissing and some, I'm ducking into a toilet here to jay it. And that's it.
It would have to be funnier to be offensive, you know, because it's just so not funny.
Right. Back to the queer stuff.
It felt like it was 5 hours long. And I saw his previous movie, Hit and Run, and I didn't entirely hate it.
No.
I don't remember it. I had to look at my review to even recall what it was. But my review was all like, oh, he's almost got it here. And I really, you know, I think there's potential in him as a filmmaker. I want to see what he's got next and be careful what you wish for. You know?
I have to say, watching this movie, though, it made me think about... When a film critic watches a movie like this, you inevitably go in thinking, oh, this is going to be a Metacritic 10. And so when it turns into like a Metacritic 30, if I were you, I might be like, oh, it's not as bad as you think, but that doesn't mean anything. It's still bad.
It's terrible. Right. It's actually worse than I thought it was going to be because, again, Shepard's previous movie was not completely, you know, a dog's breakfast.
Right.
And I love 21 Jump Street, so I'm not necessarily against the idea of taking a goofy property and doing something with it, but they didn't do anything with it.
Right, no. Yeah, it wasn't rad in any way.
And they get the Southern California stuff completely wrong, but not even as a way, like as a winking joke to those of us who live here, you know, where they go from like they're in Glendale one second and Long Beach the next, you know. No one's paying attention to that. I did enjoy the cameo by the La La Land on-ramp.
Oh, yes, right. Oh, no, the exact same ramp on the 110 or whatever that is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I think now that we know it, we're going to see it forever in movies. Like, oh, there we are.
That's the one they always shut down on Sunday morning to shoot whatever it is they got to shoot. This was so tedious and so nap-inducing. And we went to the Grove this morning to the first show.
Which should be exhilarating. So and I'm sorry that didn't work out for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. There were, what, 7 other people in the theater?
Maybe that many. And one of them was on their phone, yeah. And I didn't care.
And a deadbeat dad bringing 2 very underage children. I'm like, eh.
You should be ending your review as somebody was on their phone and I didn't care. I mean, that means yeah. something coming from Dave yeah. White. Yeah,
exactly.
That's true. Yeah, you let it slide because like who's going to begrudge them some entertainment?
There was a 3 to 4 minute sequence of time where I did doze off, and then and snapped back out of it, and nothing had happened, and it didn't matter. The queer stuff was. So minor and so silly and about, you know, like you said, Dax Shepard calling Michael Peña homophobic, but then the camera supports any anxiety an actually homophobic person might have.
Yes, right.
By
they
really
zero in on the bumping crotches when two dudes hug in a locker
room. Bumping crotches or the moment when Pena's mouth actually touches Dak Shepard's
junk,
penis or balls or whatever. They don't show that happening, but it's, you know, implied that this just happened. And you see the head go down and then both screaming like they've just been, you know.
Reefer madness, yeah.
exactly. But the
you're right. You're totally right about the this is a cake and eat it. Like we're going to be squicked out, but then we're going to talk about how you shouldn't be squicked out.
Right. Yeah.
So if any of this were funny, and the only time I laughed was when they made jokes about eating butt.
Oh yeah, and, there was a long run,
and even that
the first
was,
time was funny,
and even that was the kind of laugh where you sit and you do this.
And it still feels compensatory for the other scenes, right? Like, right. Oh, we understand eating butts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that straight people stole, I think.
Right, no. That's our Pat Boone thing. Yeah.
just like disco.
And so, I walked in thinking, okay, well, this is going to be Get Hard 2017. And it's
Yeah, it's a lot of nothing.
It's boring.
Can I just say, Dax Shepard actually is like one of my least favorite types of celebrities, which is to say, it's not that he's terrible, but he is never thrilling, and he gets more chances because he seems nicer than the other doofs who do those movies.
Right.
Well, we were talking about how, you know, there's a very brief appearance by Ben Falcone in this film.
Is there?
You probably missed it. When they're on the 4th Street Bridge in Santa Monica, he's the bicycle cop who says, come on, tell me, cop, what's going on. Like he's got like 2 lines, barely in it. But anyway, Dave was saying that he and Melissa McCarthy were on Ellen this week, and they were talking about all having seen each other at the Chips premiere, and oh, it's so funny! And
all three of them talking about how funny it is. And I thought, okay,
your friend made a movie.
You're all friends, and you're yay for you, you made the thing, and it's really funny. But I think there's that moment where you get so famous that you know, you haven't lost your needle inside. What you have lost is the ability to be honest in public about anything.
Totally.
Or to not speak. You know, just don't speak.
Well, I wonder sometimes if studio execs completely bury their own impulses and instincts to the notion of, well, I know this is garbage, but the audience will love it.
Right.
Like, those boobs will eat this up with a spoon.
Right.
I know better, of course, you know. And I think at some point, yeah, there's that part of that, like, yeah, we're all chums here. And he's affable enough that you want to, like, cut him some slack. And sure, you know, Brett Ratner's producing this thing, you know, like, the guy who thinks Rotten Tomatoes is ruining Hollywood. Like,
right.
Look in the mirror.
This all smacks of, you know, people meet at a party or a dinner party, and they're all, maybe there's cocaine.
Who knows?
But no matter what it is,
maybe it's moon juice.
No matter what has gotten them
jacked up,
they're hyping this thing to each other in a way that makes the other person feel excited.
Right.
And then it becomes a thing. And suddenly, you have to have ideas. And then you don't even, you don't really have them.
Yeah, it's like, oh crap, we have to make a Chips movie now.
Oh god, I told Brett Ratner I had this great idea for a Chips movie, and he decided to, you know, produce it. And now what do I do?
You know what also taints my feeling about this movie is that I thought there was a Chips remake like 10 years ago, but it turns out they had announced one with Wilmer Valderrama, and then it didn't happen. But this feels like a movie that came out 13 years ago or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, this this is kind of like sort of like a Land of the Lost sort of thing. Yeah,
because we had the Starsky and Hutch and all that, right?
Oh, God, I'd forgotten about that. I think, can we officially...
Who was in the Starsky and Hutch movie?
Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson. Can we put a stake in the 70s cop show now?
Yeah, really.
As a, like...
The Hawaii Five-0 still is on, correct?
That is true, yes.
Yes.
Right.
But that's a loving, I mean, not a loving remake, but it's a, they're basically just extending the premise. But these movies that are, that sort of inherently assume that they're superior to the material, you know?
Right, yeah.
Which is like, which I think is not the best starting point for a film. I mean, again, 21 Jump Street works, but it seems to be the exception. And, you know, the everybody else is just not nailing this. And you know.
And the 70s shows are, if you're. Honestly, it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, the audience, the movie-going
also,
audience.
Who remembers Chips?
Please, no.
Yeah.
You know, because it was of my youth, but I never watched it, but I at least know that it existed. But
we watched it in
I'm
my house.
Super old for the demographic they're going after for these kinds of movies, you know? So, like, if you're 35, you were born after this show went off the air.
Yeah, yeah.
No, totally. Yeah. Which is why, by the way, One Day at a Time works because it's not cooler than the original show.
Oh,
it wants to be just as funny as it. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. 2 days ago, for the sake of LKTV, which you can listen to if you subscribe to us on Patreon at patreon.com/linoleumknife. That's your ad for this episode.
I'm there.
We watched an old episode of Chips.
Ooh.
And it was, now that I've seen the movie, I'm nostalgic
for the
episode we watched, a sixth season episode, the sixth and last.
Larry Wilcox had already decided he had better things to do, so they had a new blonde guy.
Everyone asleep at the wheel. They know they're in their last season. No one cares. No one's minding the store. Nothing good is happening. Lazy, lazy, lazy. Donnie Most, who was Ralph Malfoy.
Oh, he sure was.
Happy Days. He is the guest star.
As a Gene Simmons type rocker.
Okay, well, my face is on backwards now.
A satanic Gene Simmons style rocker wearing the face makeup and a big red devil costume with a cape.
And
he sings
big fro.
Sings a song about a dance with the devil in the moonlight. Elvira is in this episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
Donnie Most's manager is played by Peter Marshall.
Ugh, you can't just throw game show trivia at me. He's
trying to kill him. So, all in all, a far more entertaining hour of television.
I had a better time watching that episode of Chips than I did watching Chips.
Than the movie we just saw.
Did Elvira get something to do?
She tangos with Eric Estrada at the end of the episode.
She comes in and is basically like, hey, I'm Elvira.
And she's in costume. It's not like
it's a Halloween episode.
Yeah. I see. Okay.
Elvira is Elvira. Yeah.
So she, you know, she says insulting things to people. Yeah.
Whew. Well, going back to your donut mention, the other big donut movie of the weekend is Power Rangers, which is apparently brought to you by Krispy Kreme, because it's mentioned a lot in this movie.
Really?
And it becomes a plot point.
Oh, my God.
Like, there's a MacGuffin involved, and that MacGuffin has something to do with a Krispy Kreme. So
I told you that they sent a bunch of Krispy Kreme donuts to Arno. Right.
Yes, you know, we're at IMDb.
Friend of ours who works for IMDb. They just sent a bunch of donuts.
Wow.
As I said on What the Flick, I haven't heard the words Krispy Kreme said this vociferously in a movie since Aaron Brockovich.
I was going to say, the Rosie O'Donnell show? Yes, right.
But yeah, so you haven't seen the movie, but you did watch the show.
Obsessively when I was a kid, yeah.
Okay, yeah. As with Chips, like, you know, this is somebody else's nostalgia, because I was out of college by the time the show premiered, so it was never on my radar.
Mm-hmm.
I did buy a used copy of the soundtrack of the movie so I could get that Shampoo song.
Oh, yeah. Okay, at the time, I remember it being really exciting, and not for 1 second processing that they were clearly taking Japanese footage
right.
and then pairing it with, like, glossy Saved by the Bell looking scenes half the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I also tried buying the toys, which were like Tickle Me Elmo level impossible to get.
Oh.
And then watching, but then of course when I heard this reboot was happening, I immediately remember thinking, where are the Ghostbuster people protesting this? Like, we can't have the new Ghostbusters with ladies in it, but please, gritty update of these, like, people in primary colored suits, you know?
Well, it's, I mean, gritty is maybe putting too fine a point on it. I mean,
the trailers at one point looked gritty.
Okay, yeah. I don't have a basis of comparison. I've been calling it a cross between Breakfast Club and Chronicle. Because they meet in detention, and it's like, you know, it's the jock who doesn't want to be a jock, and the popular girl who doesn't want to be a popular girl, and the science nerd who, you know, it's the 21st century, so now he's on the spectrum, self-described. You have the sort of outsider dude who's the Asian guy who takes care of his mom in the trailer park, and then you have outsider girl who might be a lesbian, but we don't really know.
I feel like they hyped that too, like the exclusively gay moment of it all.
Yeah, they made a huge deal. What was Jack's joke last week? Gay moment. No, New York's hottest night spot is the gay moment. Yeah, there's literally one line in which it's implied where somebody else says, like, you know, she's talking about how, like, her parents don't want to hear about her problems, and the guy's like, boyfriend trouble? Girlfriend trouble, and then she doesn't say anything, and that's it. That's the moment.
Oh my God, Harvey Milk's here.
I know exactly. Like, woo!
Hi.
Get that Pride Parade going. Anyway, it's fine.
Yeah, I heard it was fine. It seemed like it might be.
Yeah, I was reasonably entertained for a movie that I had no stake in, and you know, like Elizabeth Banks is sort of the one person who kind of, I think, gives the old school flavor of ridiculousness. She is Rita Repulsa in this. And so the movie, you know, she spends much of the movie kind of like trying to get her power back. So when she's first sort of like emerging from the sea and being all like weird, she's walking around all bizarrely and eating raw fish and, you know, just being kind of spooky, which is fun. And then, of course, once she's, you know, in her glory, she goes full Faye Dunaway and Supergirl. So,
oh, thank you for putting it exactly in my language. I will say about Elizabeth Banks, she's somebody who everything about her is exactly someone I should like. And I always feel like she's 2 degrees off. Whenever she was like on 30 Rock, I'm like, could have been somebody else. You know, like Hunger Games could have been somebody else. So I'm excited if she was great in this, I would see it for that reason.
I had fun with her in it. And do you like her in the Pitch Perfect movies?
I think those movies are like disasters, but I think she's okay in them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who is, well, Michael Hartney was just kind of...
Oh, he also hates them. We both read on Throwing Shade.
Yeah. It was also ragging the Pitch Perfect. It was like, I got no beef with the Pitch Perfect movies. I don't love them. I'm not counting the days till 3 comes out, but I had a good enough
God,
time at the first
2. There's a 3 coming
out? Oh, there's a 3 coming out.
Did Elizabeth Banks direct it? Just like the last one?
I don't know.
I feel like the direction was maybe the problem with the last one. Though I actually thought the second one was funnier than the first one, weirdly. So.
Really?
Yeah.
I just remember Rebel Wilson singing in the boat, and that was kind of my favorite bit, and that was the end.
That's about all I can remember from it at this point, from 2.
Yeah.
And Haley Steinfeld, who I guess is going to be the lead in 3, right?
Probably.
Because Anna Kendrick's got to have graduated by now, right?
So. Oh, is she not going to be in it?
I think she might like have a smaller role.
Oh, okay.
That's, I don't know, who knows. Furthermore,
who cares?
Yeah, we'll deal with it when we get there. So yeah, Power Rangers, it's perfectly fine.
And I don't talk about this film because I didn't go.
Yeah.
Because I don't care about it.
You also didn't go see Life.
I also didn't care about that.
And it's also fine, you know. This everybody's making a big deal about how like March is the new, you know, July, because we've been getting all these sort of big summery type movies, and you know, for the most part they've been like okay, you know, like Kong Skull Island was fine, and Life is sort of fine in the same way in terms of like it accomplishes what it sets out to do, but it doesn't set out to do anything very interesting. It's, you know, it's Alien with a little gravity thrown in.
Could be worse.
Yeah, totally. But it's, you know, it's just, it does play up the claustrophobia really well because it's all in this space station. And I guess it's because we now have the effects to do this easily. I've never seen a movie that leans in this hard on the anti-gravity of it all. Like, no one's feet ever touch the ground in this film. They're constantly floating. They're constantly propelling themselves through the space station like they're swimming.
Yeah, but do they perform like an operation on somebody in zero gravity? Like in that terrible movie about the kid with the bone, no. with the bones that were so brittle he couldn't live on Earth?
The Space Between Us.
The Mars Boy?
They do not.
With the bones made of candy? Candy
but,
bones.
Candy bones. Yeah. But when the monster starts eating people, they do, like, bleed out in all directions. So, you know, there's a lot of suspended gore going on.
Oh, yeah?
So that's kind of the one new thing they bring to the table.
Maybe I should have gone.
Maybe. But it's, you know, it's pretty cool looking, and they don't kill the people off in the order that you would expect, which is a plus.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's got a pretty nifty ending. I think they...
Does it have a reason to exist?
Well, not really. I mean, again, like the floating and the floating gore is the sort of the one new thing. And it's written by the guys that did Deadpool, so they know genre backwards and forwards. They know how to make this thing effectively creepy. If they had spent 10 pages of script establishing who the characters are before they all start getting bumped off,
right,
that would have helped immeasurably, I think. And so I wish they had made that bit of effort. But the monster is very cool. It starts out as a sort of unicellular organism and grows into this big sort of like flower squid lizard. You
just
know,
like Faye Dunaway, speaking of
her. There you
right.
go.
Yes.
Boom. And it too sort of swims through the air. So that's kind of cool that it's not with legs, you know, that it's more of a
Flagella.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, it's all right, but it's ultimately whatever. I do like that Rebecca Ferguson, though.
I like her too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The actress,
the act,
the
not the,
singer,
the actress,
the singer,
not the one
so,
who.
There are so many of them now.
Not the one who did sing at the Trump inauguration,
right?
But the one who wore that amazing dress and somehow didn't trip over it in Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation.
Right.
That scene where she's walking up the steps of the opera and she's got that evening gown that's somehow longer than her heels and you're just like waiting for her to catch herself and she never does.
Did you say the singer Rebecca Ferguson did and then didn't and then did?
Because or did she did
not,
and then
that's
didn't?
That's not what happened.
She did and then didn't, sorry.
She never said she would.
Oh, okay.
She said, I'll sing it. They asked her.
Right.
And she
right.
said, I'll go if you'll let me sing Strange Fruit.
Good on you.
Which is always on my rider. Me too.
And no brown M&Ms. Nice. You, Dave.
Belko.
Saw the Belko experiment. Which
Belko
I did
experiment.
See.
Now, this is from Greg McLean, who made Wolf Creek.
Right.
Wolf Creek 2.
Uh-huh. And the TV series?
And James Gunn.
Yeah, early script from him, apparently. Like, was in a drawer for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's weird, because it sure does feel like an opportunistic purge infection going on.
Well, you know, purge was not the most novel idea
on
the block.
So, I understand,
you
know, yes.
I'm sure there were a lot of people with purge-adjacent scripts in the drawer that were like, hey, I got this, you know.
I've got a movie that's kind of purgy.
Yeah.
Well, that's how they got it made, I think. Yeah. Well, that and also, you know.
James Gunn is now a brand name.
Yeah. And you know his brother, or
right.
is it his brother?
Brother.
Is Sean Gunn his brother? Yes. Okay.
Of Gilmore Girls fame, in this house anyway.
Oh, yes.
So the, okay, it's set in a South American country. I cannot remember which one.
Colombia.
It doesn't matter. Colombia. Yeah, that's right. And everybody who goes to work at this corporation, on the day they show up, there are all these new security guards around the place, checking everybody's ID, and everyone's confused. Why is this happening? When they get into work, they realize that none of the Colombian nationals who work for the corporation have come into work that day. They've all been told to stay home. And within a few moments, the entire place gets locked down. And that's kind of a cool sequence, because over every window and every door, this Get Smart sort of metal thing goes, boom, and it's like You're now encased in metal.
In a skyscraper.
In a building that's 12 stories tall, 15 stories tall. Not enormous, but...
Not the Towering Inferno or anything.
Right. So you have all these folks, and then a voice comes over the loudspeaker. A voice whose identity...
Lorenzo Music.
No, you know, yeah. Yes. Pre-chips reference there. Google that, kids. A voice comes over the loudspeaker. You don't see this voice. But if you're paying attention to the credits and you know who's in the movie, you're like, how come I haven't seen blah, blah yet? You know. Especially if you're a Gilmore Girls watcher, because it's another cast member from Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah. Kelly Bishop.
And I wish.
Alexis Bledel wreaks havoc. Yes.
I wish.
Carol King comes right out.
Yeah. Greg Henry.
Oh, okay.
Who played Logan's dad.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's also an Avenger.
Mean, mean dad. All right. So, everybody in the office.
One of those.
John Gallagher Jr.
Yes.
That dude from the newsroom and wherever
Spring
else.
Spring Awakening. And 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yes. He's the, affable, scruffy, young, 20-something man that people like. And so you figure that he might be the main character who's going to, you know, last until the end. Mm. But you're hoping not, because he's not all that interesting. And the film does follow all these other characters around. But what they are told over the voice, what the voice tells them is, you have a couple hours, and there are 80 of you, and I want 30 of you dead by any means necessary at the end of this time. If you do not kill 30 of the people among you, then I will kill 60 of you. So this is a very fun premise. Yep. I love this premise. I love the we're trapped, and who's going to kill who, and who's going to break and start slaughtering everybody. I wish they had cast someone other than Tony Goldwyn.
Mm.
Because you know it's going to be him. Because he's always a bad guy.
He's always kind of oily.
There is never a moment when Tony Goldwyn is a good guy in a movie. And so you've got him. Oh, I'm sorry. And John C. McGinley as well.
Who you know is going to lose it.
a similar kind of actor who is constantly cast as...
the creepy guy.
The creepy guy, or the guy who's going to, you know, point a gun at your head.
Yeah.
And everyone else is like, oh, it's, you know, Melanie Diaz.
Yeah.
And Sean Gunn and Abraham Ben Ruby, you know, like people you want to cuddle, you know.
Yeah.
And so they're all running around and, you know, hiding out from each other and trying not to be killed. And people, apparently there's like a weapons cache in this building. Oh, we don't know why.
Next to the staplers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We don't know why, but, you know, they're going to break into it. They're all going to start, you know.
When you know Belko, it makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So it becomes a film kind of about, you know, who will live and who will die, and will the deaths be fun to watch? And the deaths are fun to watch. They're extremely gory.
Okay.
People are getting axes to the face. That's cool. But in the end, it's just sort of pointless. Mm. They keep enough mystery as to why this is happening to set you up for a sequel.
Great.
And and the people you think are going to live, they turn out to be the ones who do, and the people who die, you think, yeah. So at the end of it, when it's over, you're thinking, okay, well, I saw that and the killings were fun, but this is pointless. And that's kind of what it is. So
when you mentioned John Gallagher Jr. being not all that interesting, it reminded me, the thing that did kind of bug me about Power Rangers is that the least interesting of the five teenagers, the jock, of course, gets picked to be the Red Ranger,
like, right,
the leader, because he's the white guy, you know. So as diverse as the cast is, everything, it's like, but we still default to the white cis het,
right,
male.
He belongs in the middle. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You get to be the star of this,
right,
thing. He does have a great collection of T-shirts, I will say. Throughout the film, he's rocking some really great shirts.
Now, he's a very sympathetic character.
Well, like, because his dad is like a mechanic or something, so he's got all these old, like, sort of vintage Castrol shirts, and it's all very like somebody went to Urban Outfitters or something, you know. Like, he's keeping it real with the shirts.
And then last is Wilson.
Yes, based on the Dan Clowes graphic novel. Were you the one that told me he hates the term graphic novel?
Does Dan Clowes hate the term graphic novel?
Yeah.
Well,
or maybe the Comics Canon did a whole episode about
Wilson
Clowes.
Is,
maybe that was it. But
technically, Wilson is not a graphic novel. It is a story in a series of discreet page long strips.
Yeah, and the style varies from page to page, where sometimes he's sort of aping Charles Schulz, and other times it's more Clausian. And
so, imagine a book entirely of Peanuts Sunday strips that told one story.
Right.
And that's...
with Laura Dern in it.
Exactly. With Laura Dern.
So let's cut to the chase, honey.
So Woody Harrelson plays Wilson, who is sort of a lifelong crank.
No, that's too nice.
Okay.
He is an obnoxious jerk.
Fair enough.
Is a misanthrope who at the same time is so narcissistic and needy that his version of misanthropy is to walk up to a total stranger. If you're a total stranger to me, Lewis, and I walk up to you in a coffee shop and I sit at your table and I try to engage you in immediately intimate conversation, and you're like, get away from me, and then I'm angry at you.
Okay,
so that's who he is. He's the kind of guy who goes on a date with a total stranger, Margot Martindale, tells her she's unattractive,
right, which is in the trailer.
And it's sort of like, what? I'm just being honest. You know, it's that. He's that kind of guy. So the worst kind of human being, short of a true sociopath or a murderer.
Yeah, right.
But who can't understand why the world around him isn't nicer. Why aren't we nicer to
him? I'm literally thinking about people on Twitter right now who have terrible personalities and then are like, why don't we get more of this type of TV show? And it's like, we're not catering to you. We literally want you off the planet.
So his father dies, and he decides that he wants to try and, you know, patch up things with his ex-wife, Pippi, played by Laura Dern, who he has terrible things to say about, but apparently she's a recovering addict and really needed to get away from him.
He calls her a toxic, soul-sucking vampire. Actually, she's just an addict, and she has to get away from him to recover. But he's going to hunt her down anyway.
Right. Yeah. So he finds out from her that she had their baby and gave it up for adoption. He then tracks down the girl and sort of weirdly tries to sort of recreate this family, and it just kind of goes south from there. It's directed by Craig Johnson, who did Skeleton Twins, which I liked quite a bit. And I like this one, too. This got kind of not great reviews out of Sundance, but, you know, it does kind of boil down to how much you can take this character and how much you're willing to allow him to get the teensiest bit of redemption. It worked for me. I really liked Harrelson's performance. I liked Laura Dern a lot. I mean, the whole cast is really good. I mean, at one point, Cheryl Hines is in there, so you're like, ah, okay, this is... Because I was thinking about Curb Your Enthusiasm, not just in sort of that brand of humor, but also like shows that I stopped watching that show because I kept seeing too much of me in there.
Oh, jeez.
And I have to
that's too bad.
That's not true.
Okay.
You say that's why you stopped watching it, and in your heart, maybe you feel like that's what is going on in your life. But you can't hold a candle, even on your meanest, most sarcastic day, to the people on Curb.
No, obviously, it's a far exaggerated version of anything I've ever done or been or said or thought. But I recognize enough elements in there that make me cringe. And Wilson was kind of the same way. It sort of reminded me of the boss that I had, who, bless her heart, kind of took me aside one day and said, you know, you don't always have to go for the joke. even when you know it's there, you could just not say it. So I related. You know, I liked it quite a bit.
I think this is just husband talk right here. You think of yourself as a worse person than you actually are. Right. Because if you're identifying with anything in this movie or on Curb Your Enthusiasm, you are way off base.
I know. I'm used to calling myself like a Judy Davis type, super sour, or whatever. When it's like, honestly, I'm making jokes and hoping to be social. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yes. You're adorable.
Oh well, thank you.
Yes. So what I really enjoyed about this was it's kind of like a picaresque through character actor land where he encounters a really angry Lauren Weedman in a pet store. Ooh, he goes on a date with Margot Martindale. He goes to the home of Brett Gelman and Marilyn Raskob, who are his friends, and they hate him so much they're moving out of town.
This is my Wizard of Oz. Yes.
His dog sitter is Judy Greer, and his
sister-in-law is Cheryl Hines.
His sister-in-law is Cheryl Hines. And so when you get all these people together, one after the other, you're like, oh, you, oh, I like you, oh, I like you. So it's just... it's this funny journey of this terrible guy demanding affection from everyone and getting nothing and sort of raging at the cloud that's passing by.
Woody Harrelson's interesting because I've seen him now. I mean, he's in like 3 movies a year at this point, right?
Yeah.
I would never say I am excited by him, but I would say he's good in everything. Like, yeah. He was really good in Out of the Furnace, a movie I would otherwise not want to see.
Right. Yeah.
I loved him in Edge of 17. Yes. I thought he was really good, and yet I'm like, I don't crave him.
Yeah, he's kind of like I don't know that a lot of people were like, oh, there's a new Gene Hackman movie.
Yeah.
But it was like when you saw a Gene Hackman movie, you're like, oh, well, he's gonna be good. This will be an interesting.
Yeah, I'm in good hands, etc.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. I don't think of like Woody Harrelson is not a name that necessarily gets people into the theater, but once you're in there, you'll discover that he knows what he's doing.
Right.
He's also part of the problem with the film.
You said this in your review in The Wrap. Yeah.
Because, yes, I did write a review of this for The Wrap. You should go read it. Woody Harrelson is so likable, even when he's a character that you are not supposed to like. He has a face that inspires your affection.
It's like a boyishness still. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Still. And from Cheers till now, you like Woody Harrelson. And here, he's horrible, but the movie wants you to kind of root for him anyway. And because the script, adapted by Dan Clowes from his own work.
Right, and Craig Johnson.
The script is such that it's a lot lighter, a lot sweeter, a lot warmer.
It's kinder to the character than the book is.
Yeah, yeah. The book is not kind to Wilson, and what happens to him is not the same thing in the book as what happens in the film. And so what it feels like when you exit this movie is that they have given this obnoxious, terrible guy a kind of grace that he has not earned and does not deserve. And
I think he does. I think there are things that happen to him that he learns. I think he learns some very hard lessons, and that a little tiny bit of them stick, which is not hard enough and not enough stuck.
and that I feel, in its own weird way, is the movie going even a little darker than the book, because the moral turns out to be. Guys like this, these sort of straight white middle-aged dudes, the world's just built for them. And no matter how terrible they are, it's all going to be okay.
They'll get a pass of some sort.
Yeah. And so that's, if there's any moral of the film, it's like, here's that kind of guy. Back away. Stay far away from this cat because he will wreck everything.
I don't know. I think that I didn't look at it as being.
But I
like
the film.
It wasn't. It didn't read to me like one of those, you know, those 1940s movies that's based on a novel that's far darker, you know.
Right.
And they sort of like tidied it up. I mean, yes, he does. He does come off better in the film than he does in the book. But I think that it's at least partially earned. I don't know. I think it's all just that face.
I think it's the Woody Harrelson face.
It sounds a little young adulty the way you describe it. The movie Young Adult.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Who would be your dream casting then for a less likable Wilson? Like Paul Giamatti?
Well, I did think about Giamatti because of American Splendor.
Sure.
And his irascibility in American Splendor is never tempered.
That's true.
And so, you know, I did think about Giamatti.
About Bill Macy.
Bill Macy, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. A little old at this point.
Yeah.
The late Philip Seymour Hoffman
would have been good.
Yeah,
yeah. Anybody who walks through a Todd Solondz movie unscathed, any man would have been a
Dylan
good,
Baker.
Someone like Dylan Baker, yeah. Someone who's not inherently lovable,
right?
Because there it really is a puppy-ish quality to Woody Harrelson, even though he is, late middle-aged now,
mm-hmm. Right.
And I would have preferred someone a little less, cuddly in the role.
Fair enough.
It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, people should see it, I think.
And if not for no other reason than all these great, people.
Like I said, I want like Parker Posey to spring up, just like the.
I was wondering, honestly, as I walked, as
Jackie Weaver is the male.
I thought. Well, I guess Parker Posey is going to show up eventually. She does. She does not. But, yeah, that's it's. It ain't bad.
Yeah. M. Emmett Walsh.
Yeah.
Is he alive or dead?
I think alive.
I think alive.
M. Emmett Walsh? I do not know. Well, we raced through, and we've got.
You were worried about time.
I was worried about time because normally, I mean, here's the thing. When we don't have a guest, we just meander.
This is true.
We do a lot of meandering.
We're being polite for company. And
I sense your fear.
So, Lewis, tell us about how a podcast becomes a TV show. Not that we're ever going to be one. But
I would love to know myself. I was shocked. When I heard Throwing Shade became a TV show, I was like, this gay guy and this lady worked it out.
Well, my brother and me became a TV show,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, that's true. Have you seen those at all on CISO?
No.
Oh, it's very funny.
I have not watched CISO one time, and that's like, I'm like the demo, right? Like, they picked that, and they made that for me. So,
yes.
Pretty much.
You owe them that. But I mean, like, okay. I mean, I assume that by the time you got hired, this was a show that existed, and they had some idea of what the structure of it was going
to
be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just a hire. I've known Brian for years, but sure.
And what's always tricky, I think, for a show like that is you guys had to be reasonably timely. So I mean, it's not like you could sit down and write 10 weeks and then walk away. Like, y'all were doing it week to week,
right? The weird thing was there are sketches on the show too. Uh-huh. That like we had one about just like it can be really irreverent, like we were just talking about there's a sketch about how they never find gay ghosts on ghost hunting shows.
Right.
So like that we wrote like months in advance and they filmed it months in advance. But then most of the show we did like The Daily Show or John Oliver or whatever, where it was whatever was happening that week, which was honestly, my first day in the job was right before the election, the day before.
Wow.
And so we were kind of banking on like Hillary wins and then we'll have all these like rad new things that people aren't thinking about regarding feminism and gayness to talk about. But it's like, oh no, it's this old stuff for the next 10, you know, 4 years or whatever. So kind of a bummer in that way, but easy, or maybe perhaps easier to write about.
And so given the whole premise of the show has always been about ladies and gays, was the whole writing room ladies and gays?
Yes, there was... all the other writers were women or gay guys. Our showrunner runs Tosh.0 and Review, and he is a straight guy, and his name is Charlie Siskel, the Oscar nominee for Finding Vivian Mayer, if you remember that documentary.
And nephew of Gene, right?
Indeed, yes. Oh, I talked about this Saturday Night Fever suit. He's like, I'm one of 8 people to have ever worn it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite things in life itself is that picture of Gene Siskel in the grotto at the Playboy Mansion.
Right, yes.
It's like, he was a stone-cold player.
Yeah.
Like, we had the big porn mustache and everything. It's like, Siskel, damn.
But that was the only heterosexual dude influence in the room, and hopefully the last one I'll ever meet. I've done a damn good job.
Was there ever any kind of standards and practices ever an issue as far as like?
No, I think if you listen to the podcast Throwing Shade, like they're pretty all over the place and go pretty deep and are occasionally vulgar or whatever. So I think they knew exactly what they were getting into. I can't think of one thing they wanted to change, actually. Mm. And we were always in contact with those people.
Okay.
So
because they're both like Funny or Die employees,
yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And was there did Funny or Die produce the show? Or?
Yes. Yes, it was through them. I wish I had a less hazy vision of what that was. But the premiere was held at Funny or Die. Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I was going to interrupt and say, have you seen the bumpers on Viceland, where Action Bronson is in a meeting with Standards and Practices?
Have you watched F That's Delicious on Viceland? Action Bronson is this like hip hop guy.
You know who he is?
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And chef turned rapper.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And okay. he travels the world getting high and eating things.
So
that's
he's visibly stoned in the meeting with Standards and Practices, and she's actually saying, "Okay, I need you to focus and do this and say this and not this, and here's when you can say this and when you cannot say this." And he's like, and like that's the whole bumper, because they bleep everybody on that show constantly. There's no the title,
yes,
invites right. that. So yeah,
one of my favorite temp gigs ever was when I first lived here in the early 90s, I spent like 2 or 3 weeks working in the standards and practices office for the Fox network.
Oh my gosh. I'm thinking of what's going on during that time. Is that a Herman's Head time?
Maybe it was. Well, I know the George Carlin show was giving them fits about certain things.
Oh, right.
But the big thing that went down when I was there was the gay kiss on Melrose Place.
Oh.
Because, which you, if you may recall, was like edited in such a weird way that it was almost like they like one of them tripped and brushed lips with the other one. Like it was so soft focus, fast, blink and you miss it. But, you know, the people either called to complain or they called to thank the network for having done it. And in both cases, I told them to write a letter. That was like,
really?
That was my whole job for a whole day was answer phones and tell them to write letters.
Oh, what a nice slice of life. You could do a short about that.
All right, we're done.
All right.
We are finished.
Where can people find you online, Lewis?
I continue to be at Lewis Vertel on Twitter. And then if I ever find a sophisticated way to blog, I'll tell you all about it. I have not. So.
And why are you not podcasting?
I would love to know that myself. I want to do an all-actresses podcast called Caught in the Actress. So,
there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, you get paid to be funny. So when are you going to start? Don't want to just give that. It away.
When are you going to start
doing
this? I'm
going to say, no, ASAP.
When are you going to start doing this?
I literally have a text chain called Actress Sexuals, which is just gay guys who want to talk about, you know, Helena Bonham Carter all day or whatever.
Yeah. I say, Dave will totally do your, like, Isabelle Huppert episode.
Oh, please. But, really? I just saw La Ceremony for the first time. How sad is that I only just saw it? Anyway.
Yeah, I was too tired to watch anything last night, so I just scrolled through Filmstruck and added things to my watch list for later.
I also have Filmstruck. What a good time.
Oh, so good.
Finally watched Fanny and Alexander. Well, another episode.
I still need to make myself watch the whole TV version of Fanny and Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love the Christmas episode, which is the first one, but I haven't gone through the other, like, 8 hours of it. I have seen the whole TV Scenes from a Marriage, though.
Oh, yeah.
Which is delicious. Ooh. Like, every second of it is great.
Why was I under the impression that you'd watched all the Fanny and Alexander?
I kept meaning to and just didn't get around to it. But I did. I watched that first chapter for my Christmas book.
Right.
And I need to circle back to it. Because, yeah, we have the box set in there. So, you know.
It's sitting in there.
No, I will watch it. I will totally watch it. Cause it's,
waiting
cause, for you. Because the long Scenes from a Marriage is great. And speaking of Liv Ullmann, by the way, Criterion finally put out the European cuts of The Emigrants and The New Land, which are dynamite. I know you know The Emigrants because she was nominated.
She sure was, yes.
And they're great, and no one talks about these movies. It's Jan Troell, who still works and still has stuff coming out.
Yeah.
And Robert Abley and I went like 2 nights in a row at the to LACMA to watch them, and they were so awesome. So,
oh, that's so rad.
Not doing a DVD pick this week, but go find those. Anyway, Lewis, you're so great. Thank you
for having me,
here.
Gents. You're my two favorite film critics, 1 and 2.
Bless your heart.
Yes.
Thing one, thing two.
Go check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast and secretly... B-Movies podcast and Cancel Too Soon with Bibbs and Whitney, The Schmoes Know, The Sewers of Paris, The Comics Canon. Go to YouTube and check out Paul Tran Bakerman and Let's Gay, where the three, the E is a three.
L3TS Gay.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, Fat Guys. The movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting, SVU, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. Go leave us a review. It helps us a lot when you do that. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. He's at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We are still selling the traditional classic black linoleum knife t-shirt with white lettering across the chest. It's $22 inside the United States. If you live outside the U.S., let us know. We'll tell you how much more the postage is. You
can much more postage.
PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, and we will be back next week with more, so we'll catch you then.
Goodbye.